Wednesday, March 9th, 2016. This is the NCSG Privacy and Human Rights at ICANN meeting. It's being held in Diamond Room, and it will run from 9 to 10:30 a.m. local time.
Okay, folks, we seem to be a very small but dedicated crowd this morning, so please come up and join us at the table. The folks who are speaking are up here, so don't worry, we won't put you on the spot. Grab a chair closer. It's kind of a big room, really. And we'll start in a minute as soon as we... Okay, everybody reasonably ready? Ah, good. Wonderful. That's good. None of the rest of us have slides. Okay. Bonjour tout le monde. Hello, everybody. I apologize for being a little late starting. We're still waiting for one of our speakers, but let me just introduce who's at this table here and who will be speaking. On my left, I have Kathy Kleiman, who will be telling us about the history of WHOIS struggles over the years. My name is Stephanie Perrin. Kathy and I are both with the non-commercial users constituency. On my right, I have Sophie Kwasny from the Council of Europe and Peter Kimpian, also from the Council of Europe and the Hungarian Data Protection Agency. So, and they'll be telling us, giving us a bit of background on Europe and their views on some of the things that are happening here at ICANN. So, without any further ado, we do have remote participation. Yes, we have a couple of people online. So I'll be counting on staff to give me a wiggle when somebody has a question in the remote. And I guess any time now, have you started the recording? I should have given you a signal, sorry. Okay, very good. I see the agenda up on the board behind me. My job, I think, is to just give sort of an orientation on where we are on all things privacy that are happening at ICANN. Without putting him on the spot, I'd like to identify David Cake there. Wave your hand, David. David is one of the co-chairs of the recently formed PDP on RDS, help me out, David.
Next Generation Registry Data Services, I think. But the PDP to decide whether we should replace WHOIS, the WHOIS system. We're already replacing the WHOIS protocol. And if so, with what?
Right, and I must say I struggle with the name all the time, so I call it WHO2, but the name has not caught on satisfactorily, I think. Anyway.
I think the Next Generation bit has a charming sort of Star Trek ring about it.
Right. Kathy has suggested perhaps it would be good to go around the table just very quickly if people would like to identify themselves and their interest here.
But in the interest of privacy, you don't have to.
Yes.
Right. So, Kathy Kleiman, a co-founder of the Non-Commercial Users Constituency, and spent way too much time over the last 15 years on WHOIS, but I'll tell you about that later.
Vincent Sizer, University of Vienna, somewhat of an academic observer.
Tatiana Tropina, Max Planck Institute in Germany, and Non-Commercial Users Constituency here at ICANN.
Hi, Aidan Thurdland, member of the NCUC.
Hi, I'm Barbara Middleman. I'm a relative newcomer to ICANN, non-technical person, and my interest is largely having to do with privacy in medical and biomedical applications.
I'm Mark Seiden from the ESSAC. This year I'm on the NOMCOM and also the membership committee for the ESSAC, and we are actually trying to find a privacy engineer to participate in ESSAC activities.
Maria Farrell, Interconnect Communications and member of the NCUC.
Stacey Walsh, Interconnect Communications, member of NCUC, and I'm on the RDS PDP and the Human Rights Working Group.
David Cake, Electronic Frontiers Australia.
Rachel Graye, a user.
I'm Christian De Hing. I'm a judge in Belgium in the commercial court. Thank you.
Mona Al-Ash'ar, I'm from Lebanon, professor of law, but mainly head of NGO work, active in cybersecurity, and actually we have a project on creating a commission agency for personal data protection in Lebanon.
I'm Hadef Al-Bustanji from Jordan. I'm a judicial assistant at Jordanian Ministry of Justice and IP student in IP student in IP law in Jordan. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Anna Sedrati. I'm from Morocco Next Generation. I'm a telecommunication engineer and I have big interest in human rights issues. I'm representing civil society in Morocco.
Good morning. My name is Moto Kawaizawa. I'm with the Institute for Human Rights and Business.
My name is Bastiaan Goslings. I work for the Amsterdam Internet Exchange, but I'm here on behalf of the Dutch Internet Society chapter and at-large structure.
Pania Milano, University of Amsterdam, and GNSO counselor for the non-commercial stakeholder group.
Niels ten Hoeve, I'm with Article 19, and I'm chairing the Cross-Community Working Party on ICANN, Social and Corporate Responsibility to Respect Human Rights.
John Selby, Macquarie University. I'm doing a research project on the intersection between international trade law and internet governance, and who is one of the first issues which is emerging there.
Oh, Peter Kempian from the originally from the Data Protection of Hungary and member of the TPD, which is an advisory committee to the Convention 108, which is a data protection convention of the Council of Europe, and we'll be talking about this later in more detail.
Yes, and Sophie Kwasny from the Council of Europe in Strasbourg, and I'll be telling you more about our work later.
Okay, thank you very much. okay, briefly, how many here have been following closely the privacy work that has been going on at ICANN? Okay. So I apologize for boring you, but I'm going to give a brief update for those who haven't on the initiatives that we've recently had. There was a very large PDP that went on for policy development process that went on for a year and a half on the issue of whether or not, or rather what accreditation issues we had in terms of the privacy proxy services accreditation project. There had been a recommendation from the board, I believe, to accredit privacy proxy services, which have been operating for many years now without any kind of official rules. So the determination was made that privacy proxy services should be subject to some kind of accreditation. And this group was struck to examine the issues. The report was passed by the GNSO. I actually believe there may be a mention of the PPSAI report in the GAC communique. It was a long, that would be the GAC communique that is coming this week. It was a long and fairly fractious discussion. One of the issues that we had some tension over was whether privacy proxy services should be available only to individuals or also to commercial entities, small groups, NGOs, in other words, non-individuals. And we decided in favor of allowing it. I must say that there was a petition that went on during the call for comments period, and we got, how many, Kathy, was it finally?
We got one petition with 10,000 signatures and numerous comments, as well as 15,000 other comments. I know, because I read through most of them.
Right. And thank you for doing that. So that was a record in ICANN's history in terms of the number of comments we got. So that more or less settled the dispute on whether or not privacy proxy services should be available to everyone. So that recently closed. We also had an implementation committee of volunteers looking at trying to improve the implementation of the longstanding policy on conflicts with law. And if you're not aware... If you're not aware of this policy, it basically tells registrars that in the event that they determine that their WHOIS requirements are in violation of local data protection law, they should bring a binding order indicating that that's the case, that they are violating the law, to ICANN, and ICANN will give them a waiver from the legislation. Now, from the WHOIS requirements. There's a separate process that is not under this policy for a waiver from data retention requirements, which are also illegal under some laws. And the data protection commissioners have been writing ICANN repeatedly saying, particularly for Europe, all of our data protection agencies agree that this is in violation of our data protection law, so give them all a waiver. And ICANN has not recognized that letter. So there's quite a bit of frustration on the part of the registrars because they have to go out and seek this authorization from the data protection commissioners. Data protection commissioners normally don't give opinions on matter before you break the law. So... And they were in a classic catch-22, if you are familiar with that expression. And there was quite a bit of frustration. We had quite a few registrars on the group. Nevertheless, the policy continues, I don't think we solved the improvement question, improvement of the triggers, which was our task. So the next question is, what do we do about that policy? That would be up to the GNSO to decide to alter that policy. So that, you will find if you look on the ICANN website that there is an area, All Things WHOIS, and a list of these projects. I'm not going to go into the more technical ones, except to mention that there is a call for comments out right now on the RDAP implementation. The RDAP is the Registration Data Access Protocol. And a couple of years ago, when the EWG finished its work, that's the expert working group that was commissioned to basically to look at the WHOIS and make recommendations, we did make a recommendation, I was on that group, that there be tiered access. In other words, that instead of everybody getting access to WHOIS without authenticating themselves or identifying themselves, that it should be tiered. And, you know, that some data elements should be public, and then underneath that, you would have to identify yourself and provide adequate purpose and reason for getting the data. In order to do that, you need a new protocol, and the RDAP protocol does facilitate that because it has differentiated access. So this is a necessary technical improvement to allow some of the policy requirements. Sadly, the policy requirements have yet to be determined, and quite frankly, the new HUTU has only just started, and Chuck Gomes, who is the chair of it, was joking the other day that it would only take us 3 months. My guess is 5 years. I shouldn't say that because I'd love to have any of you join it if you'd like to.
You're terrifying me, Stephanie.
It's probably somewhere in between 3 months and 5 years. David has his light on.
I should say you're terrifying me with 5 years. But I just wanted to clarify something about the RDAP implementation. just in light of your comment. So RDAP is a replacement for the WHOIS protocol. It has both pros and cons from a privacy point of view. Certainly it's more secure. But you mentioned the differentiated access or tiered access. That is not going to be implemented in the current RDAP implementation, which they're doing now, because that would be a major policy change. And there's actually probably still a few policy implications of what they're doing now that the GDD are sort of slipping through when they should really have put it to some sort of process. But they aren't doing that differentiated access on the current RDAP implementation. It certainly is the case that the EWG recommended it, and the next-gen RDS may also end up recommending it, at which point they probably will implement differentiated access, but they're not doing it yet. But the RDAP protocol allows for it where WHOIS does not.
Thanks, David. Anybody who'd like to put their comments in and recommend that ICANN recommend that implementers construct their systems so that they can do it as cheaply as possible, we'd love to have you do that. Thanks. I'm going to now turn the mic over to Kathy Kleiman, who's going to give us a history of previous work on WHOIS, so that'll help us understand what's going on with this rather large PDP that's just started.
It occurred to me in my introduction that I forgot to do the promotion I promised my firm as a condition of coming here, so there's an echo. Miriam, I just sent you a note on that. Could we put up that slide a little later? Can we go back to the agenda slide? We'll get around to this. Okay, so by day, I'm at a firm called Fletcher, Hilden, Hildreth, the U.S.'s oldest telecommunications firm, and I run the Internet Law and Policy Practice. And so I'm going to be devil's advocate for a second here and tell you what I've heard here for 15 years, which is that domain names are important pieces of information, and people use them on the internet to post all sorts of information that's illegal. Counterfeits, illegal activity, defamation, fraud. And so it's very important to be able to track who is the domain name registrant. And ICANN inherited a system that had it inherited a directory service. We call it the WHOIS, but it had a lot of information in it. Can everybody hear me if the microphone's not directly in front? Is that okay? So it had a lot of information in it. So I went back to the old techies to ask where that information came from. So National Science, and how this WHOIS developed. And what I was told by Scott Bradner, who was Harvard IT, I don't know if he's retired yet, but Harvard Information Technology for a million years. Is he still there? In 2 months, really. And in his honor, I wear sandals all the time. And so Scott said that it goes back to the NSF days when it was a closed network and a trusted network. And if you wanted, he was running Harvard.edu. And if the guy who ran MIT.edu, if there was a problem with the T1 line down Massachusetts Avenue between Harvard and MIT, and they wanted to know who to talk to, they looked up in this WHOIS, and it was Scott's information. It was his name. It was his business address at his Harvard IT office. It was his business phone number. We didn't have cell phones then. And it was a fax number. And that was in his email. And normally they sent email, but occasionally picked up the phone and called each other, and I guess sometimes they had lunch, and figured out where the office address was. That's the model that scaled into a global database for about 400 million people. Every speaker on the internet who uses a domain name now has to put their name, address, phone number, email. You are excused from putting your fax number in, though. And that's what scaled, really without looking at it very closely. Except we did try, and I should say my background includes, I interned with what became the Electronic Privacy Information Center in the United States early on, and years ago, I was also an intern at the Israeli Ministry of Databases, Mishrad HaMishpatim. And so I was exposed to data protection structures that don't exist in the United States, those that were in the European Union, and that there's many, many different ways of looking at things. But the WHOIS is, well, actually, let's look at the record. Miriam, can we look at the record now? Let's take a look at what a who is record is, because we spend all of our time talking about a few fields, which have to do with data that identifies people, but most of it's something completely different. We're going to page through the whole thing and then go back up to the top. So this is only part of it, and we'll keep going down. And I've highlighted it. The highlight is mine. So this is a sample who is record of Amnesty International. So they're amnesty.org. They've got a domain name ID, which is unique. They've got, the really important thing is who's the registrar? Who's the one responsible for putting this up in the database? Kind of who can take it down if there's a technical problem? So the registrar is there. The updated date, I'm going to kind of go through. We have an updated date and a creation date. Actually, these create infinite amounts of spam because coming close to the expiration date, registrants will get a lot of information that says you have to update, you're going to lose your domain name, and often it's not from their registrar, it's from somebody else. And that's creating a lot of problems with spam and misre-registration and people getting credit card data. So we have the expiration date, we've got the registrar, which is Network Solutions here, and an ID number. Something new through the Registrar Accreditation Agreement of 2013, there is a registrar abuse contact. You'll notice that's not personal information. They've created an email address and phone number so that whoever's sitting at the desk can be contacted. In this case, Amnesty International has put in special protections, client transfer prohibited, so you can't transfer it. Not easily, because there's a lot of hijacking that goes on among domain names. And you see that there's, we see the registrant name, so they're identified as Amnesty International, the street, the city, the state, the postal code, the country. In this case, no phone number has been entered. That's going to change. There's a real push for accuracy and completeness among this data. Miriam, can we page down? There is a fax number, interestingly. And of course, a registrant email address, which is actually really important. So they've created DNS admin, amnesty.org, to be contacted if there are any problems, and that makes sense. And that way, if someone's on vacation, someone else can answer the email through the general administrative box. Notice now in addition to registrant, we now have administrative name, organization, street, city. And in this case, Amnesty, as so many non-commercial organizations, as so many individuals, has just repeated the data from the registrant. But if you go down a little farther, there's a third contact, which is technical. And sometimes you'll see the same data for registrant, admin, and tech. But in this case, they've said that if there's any technical problems, go to Network Solutions and they'll solve it, which makes sense. So you're going to the registrar to handle technical problems. And then at the very bottom, you have what you really need on this, which is the name server. Where do you find this domain name in the internet universe, in the TCP/IP universe? Where would you go to actually get the website, get the information, the email, the listservs associated with this domain name? And in this case, they have four name servers, which probably indicates they get a lot of traffic. Can we go back up to the top? Thanks, Miriam. And let me just give you pause. What if this were Charlie Hebdo? We're identifying the location of an organization. And that's creating infinite numbers of problems. 20 years ago, I started seeing these problems coming through. Harassment, stalking, some related to the DNS, some not. So harassment, somebody's got a really cool domain name, somebody else wants it. They send all sorts of letters. Cease and desist letters. You have a generic word, a really big company wants it. A lot of cease and desist letters will pass. I've seen individuals, small businesses, small organizations, for no good reason under trademark law, threatened with treble damages, jail, all sorts of things. I once went up against a billion-dollar company who had found my registrant through the Who Is and told them that if they didn't stop their crazy claims, I was taking them on the Tonight Show and we were going to ridicule them nationally, and they pulled out very quickly. But what's happening, you know, it's one thing to threaten to try to get a cool, neat domain name that you otherwise are not entitled to, but, you know, real people are threatened here, journalists, bloggers, home-based businesses, small businesses. This home address, this address that often winds up being home or identifying where an organization is that's controversial, is very upsetting. So since the beginning of internet, ICANN time, we've been trying to pull back. And we've had WHOIS task forces, And what you're going to find, and not around people at this table, but if we had the full ICANN table, the first thing you'd find is that most of the people in this organization want more information than who is. They want more identification of that information. They want it to be more accurate. Whereas I want to pull most of it out, or at least the stuff that I've highlighted. So let me tell you, instead of going through kind of long history of ICANN fighting this, what I'm going to do is focus on the Who Is review team and the final report that we created. We met for 18 months. We're a requirement under the Affirmation of Commitments, which is part of the deal that the Department of Commerce gave with ICANN when they gave ICANN more independence. I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago now, maybe a little longer. And so we were a group of law enforcement and government and non-commercial and intellectual property, and we met for 18 months looking at the Who Is record, looking at Who Is uses, talking. And we came up with a set of findings. I'm just going to go through it briefly with you. One is that WHOIS should be a strategic priority, that ICANN should stop messing around with it in lots of different corners and try to figure out what to do with it. Two is that there should be a single WHOIS policy. It turns out that WHOIS was actually buried in registry agreements and registrar agreements, and to really understand what we were doing about this directory database, it was buried in all sorts of different places. We said, pull it out of the closet, let people know really everything that affects WHOIS. Outreach. We said, you know, there are a lot of people who don't want to follow, who don't follow ICANN's kind of convoluted discussions, who might be interested, like data protection people. And so we said, if there's a proceeding, let's go out of our way to make sure. Let's through ICANN and its staff, let's go out of our way to make sure that outreach reaches people who would care about this one proceeding among all of ICANN's other proceedings. Data accuracy, they got that through. A lot of people want whatever winds up in this database to be accurate. Proxy and privacy services. If you can't, this is something the market created. Does everybody know what a proxy privacy service is? I'll just summarize it briefly. It's when you go to something like domains by proxy, and you, so when I register a domain name with GoDaddy, they say, would you like to pay extra, $10 a year extra, for a privacy service? And I say yes, and it means that they put their domains by proxy, which is kind of a co-owned company, their name, their address, and their phone number in the database, so I don't put my home address in. There's always a move within ICANN to ban proxy and privacy services. We've just created a process for accrediting them, but there's always a move to ban them, and it will never go away.
I have a question, because I've seen different implementation on about this under different TLDs, and also different difference between CC TLDs on how this can be done. And I've also seen free services and paid services. And so so my question would be, A, is the use of a privacy proxy standardized? And is there difference between gTLDs, ccTLDs, and implementation, or is it in the RAA, or where does this difference stem from?
Okay, so privacy and proxy have only recently been recognized as actually existing, and now they're accredited through the gTLDs. But there's no standardization. Some, depending on, and country codes are totally different. ICANN does not regulate country, does not do any policy with country codes. It coordinates among the country codes, but country codes are not, unless they've chosen to sign a contract with ICANN, which few have, they're not bound by ICANN for their policy. So whatever they're doing with WHOIS is their job. Some are publishing the whole directory service, some are publishing nothing. Australia, at least the last time I checked, if you went to Microsoft.com, they would not give you the corporate address. They would confirm that Microsoft was registered, microsoft.com.au, but they wouldn't give you the corporate address. They said they don't need to. But in the gTLDs, we're different. All generics are regulated by contract, and but still, among the different privacy and proxy services, there are their own implementations. The one thing ICANN will make mandatory is that they have to respond now, because a bunch of them weren't. But I've talked with European registrars who also offer privacy services who say they don't believe under law they can charge for it. I assure you, in the United States, they believe they can charge for it. But let me turn it over to Stephanie.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I just wanted to jump in here and say it's not something we've made a whole lot of noise about, but at least in Canada, the data protection law is very clear. You have to tell people what their rights are and state your policy. And ICANN in the 2013 RAA has all kinds of rules about registrars, what they have to do, that are basically competition between registrars based, I would say, in terms of motivation. But there's no requirement to tell individuals about their data protection rights. Now, the registrars themselves apply their own law. The RAA says you have to tell people that you have proxy services if you run them and how much they cost. But one of my frustrations is it makes a big difference whether you're getting a .ca or a .com in Canada, and nobody tells you that the country code has a much better privacy policy than the other GTLDs. In fact, the average user doesn't know what a GTLD is or a CCA, and nor should they, in my view. You know, life's complicated enough. Thanks.
Sorry to break the flow a bit, but then I have a question to the Council of Europe's expertise a bit on this. Is there any chance we could perhaps push for enabling a privacy proxy by default?
Well, this is a difficult question. We've been also assessing this new document on privacy proxy services, but we understood that this is a fruit of a compromise already. There are, of course, certain additions which could be also made, but we will be looking at it in the future how to improve this. For now, I think this has been already accepted as it is, or it will be soon.
From the ICANN document, I understand, but from a legal standpoint, like European privacy protection.
Please remember to state your name for the record. Yeah, thanks.
But privacy by design and privacy by default are definitely principles that European data protection laws are trying to promote and implement. So that's certainly something that at European level could be pushed for by European data protection authorities.
However, being said that, I would also emphasize the right of data subjects to choose. So I think that would be the most important thing to depart from. So whether the data subjects wish to choose this or wish not. So I think both has to be, it can be built in. And of course, privacy by default is one of our major priority as privacy by design. However, the choice of data subjects will overrule anything, in my view.
Thank you, Niels de Nover, for the record. Thank you for this great and informing answer, and I think this comes back to Stephanie's answer of the importance of informed consent. But if we want to work on informed consent, then I think we really need to work with the registries and the registrars on the sign-up forms, because there is very little except for I agree with terms of agreement, which is, I think, the biggest lie every day told on the internet, because no one actually reads and agrees to the...
You can't work with the registrars on that. They're bound by contract to do just what they're doing. I mean, they can't opt out. They can't give you more options. They're bound by contract. ICANN makes them collect that data. And so I just wanted to share, and I'm almost done, that the WHOIS review team came to a startling conclusion, it was startling for ICANN anyway, that all types of registrants actually want privacy and don't want to put their data in that open 24-hour accessible, 24/7 accessible record. And I'll just read quickly, individuals would prefer not to have their personal data published on the internet as part of the WHOIS record. Organizations, religious, political, ethnic minorities, or those sharing controversial moral or sexual information are concerned. And companies, even companies, want privacy and protection from this kind of publication for upcoming mergers, new product or service names, new movie names, and other types of product launches. And because we didn't get it right, and this is the history of ICANN, because we came up with too much privacy, immediately after, Stephanie was drafted to be on the expert working group, because privacy is a hydra in ICANN. You cut off one head and two grow. And so I'm glad you guys are all here. That's the history of WHOIS at ICANN.
Okay, Stephanie Perrin again. Thanks very much, Kathy. Any questions on this before we move on? Yes. Please.
I'm Hudhaifa from Jordan. I want to ask Ms. Kathleen, if I got my point, your point, you said that the name of the street, the name of the city cannot be registered. Actually, in my country, because as a developing country, this thing haven't been taken into consideration by registrar. So I think that I can recommend in the future certain process that for developing countries to take these things to consideration. Moreover, I want to ask who has the right to object the abusive registration of domain names like these things? If someone register at the name of a street, does the government have the right to object the registrar, or the interested party is anyone of the community? Thank you.
Could you give me an example, kind of a quick example of what you're?
Yes, if someone registered the name of the street, who has the right to object this registration, to submit application to object this registration?
If the street address is wrong?
Yes.
If the street address is wrong.
Yes.
So instead of putting in my home address for a new home-based business, I put in 555 Main Street. Right now, you can go to ICANN compliance, and it's possible they'll take that domain name down. Well, they won't. They're a little inconsistent, but it's possible they will.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes, Mark.
It seems like a lot of the privacy concerns hinge around doing business with the public, and so that entities that take money from the public and could defraud them might be required to have less privacy or more easily pierceable privacy in fraud cases. And for me, that seems quite reasonable. Your Charlie Hebdo example is a perfect one, because they take money from the public, but as you could see, they might have benefited from some privacy. Although, as it turns out, of course, their WHOIS record was not used to find their office and shoot them up. So, you know, you can't solve every problem in society by putting perfect privacy in WHOIS.
For what it's worth, I run a nonprofit called the ENIAC Programmers Project. I'm dedicated to telling the story of women in the early history of computing. There were lots of them, and we don't know about them. And we do take money. We take donations, but they're all through PayPal and another a group called Docs in Progress. So should we lose my privacy because we do collect money, but it's through other sources, and most small businesses and others are working through PayPal. So what we found as we debated this over many, many years is that it becomes more and more complicated the farther down we go. It's not as easy as, do you take money? Because often you're not taking it directly, you're going through, and that's why PayPal and others are wonderful. So very complicated, but a good point, and it comes out often, should we ban any kind of privacy for commercial entities and keep it for non-commercial? And again, the finding of the WHOIS review team is that commercial companies want it too. Want privacy. Again, if two companies are merging, you're actually, at least in the United States, since there's security laws, not allowed to reveal that merger until a certain time. So even though you've got the domain names, you're all lined up, you can't tell. You know, the market has to find out all at once. And people were finding things out by seeing who was registering certain domain names. So there's all sorts of reasons, but it gets complicated because, of course, you do want to find out who's behind somebody, you know, an e-commerce site that's fraudulent.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. One of the things that I'm a little bit rabid about, quite frankly, as a former government person, retired now, governments can regulate e-commerce. ICANN has a very limited remit. I would like to keep a very, very bright line between what ICANN has the authority to regulate, because let's not kid ourselves. If you cannot sell a domain name unless you sign on to the ICANN contract, then whatever is in that contract is regulation by any other name. It's regulation through contract. And we do not want ICANN to start looking into the uses of domain names and deciding this one's good and that one's bad. And keeping that bright line is extremely difficult, particularly with the new GTLDs, where they're putting on social conditions in order to get such and such a name, top-level domain. So this is going to be one of the challenges, I think, in the upcoming Who Is Review, which you should join, by the way, Mark.
Because we're going to do it all over again.
Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Anas from Morocco, Exchange. I would like to raise a question about privacy that we're talking about. Actually, all the privacy issues that I heard, if I understood well, are concerning protecting from hijacking or from piracy or things like that. But I would like to know, we are here in Africa, we're in Morocco, so it's not like the West, and it's other other situation that we have here, other problems that we have in this region that are not as the problems that you might have in London or in other places. Well, my question is that privacy should not only protect people from those issues like theft or cybercrime or things like that, but privacy, in my opinion, and I think other people share it with me, is that sometimes you have to protect people and citizens from their own governments. You know, when you write an address, it might be that someone is doing some kind of activism or someone is in some opposition movement, and when the government has the address, so it becomes easier for them to harass them or to make some things for them. I know that this is a political issue because it's also a matter of sovereignty, and I have asked a lot of questions here in this ICANN, which is my first one, about these terms, and a lot of people just answer me, this is out of scope, or ICANN doesn't work with that. So I'm just wondering that how you deal with that, because I know that you would say that government is sovereign in its country, but you're all people of human rights, so how can you deal with that? I mean, government should be sovereign, but at the same time, government cannot do things that are not allowed, I mean, in international laws. So that was my question, and I just wanted to focus on the region because we are here in this region, and you have opportunity to talk about London and West in other meetings that are in the other region. Thank you.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Thank you so much for that intervention. We'd love to have you join NCUC, join civil society here, but I'm passing the microphone to Sophie Kwasny to answer that question.
Yes, thank you, because the question is exactly linked to what the Council of Europe is doing. So maybe to start with, just a broad explanation of what the Council of Europe is, because it's not clear for Europeans, so I can imagine it's even less clear outside Europe. So we're an international organization, so it's a regional organization based in France, in Strasbourg, so nothing to do with the European Union in Brussels. Even if the European Union also has the Council of the European Union. So a mixing of names makes it very difficult. Unlike the EU in Brussels, we have 47 countries. So we already geographically spread really completely at the east. We have Russia, we have Turkey, for instance. Those are countries that make big difference in terms of EU Council of Europe. Also, our identity is completely different to start with. After Second World War, European states decided to create stronger bounds between the states. One direction was economic ties, that's the EU. The other one is a human rights identity, democracy and rule of law organization, that's the Council of Europe. And we have the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, which is a unique judicial institution. Our member states, so it's 47 countries, have all ratified the European Convention on Human Rights and can be taken to the court by individuals for violations of their rights. And this is about violations by states, so that's clear. So this is Article 8 of the Convention on the Right to Privacy. But we also, in the late 70s, started working on a convention on data protection, specifically on data protection. This convention is 30 years old now, so it's an old instrument. We're modernizing it. What is very interesting is that this convention was already thought as a global instrument. So it's not limited to European countries. Any country in the world can accede to this convention. There are a number of conventions in the Council of Europe that are like that. And I want, and I'm sorry for the privacy sensitive souls that are here, I want to mention our cybercrime convention, which is a good example that I would like to point out because the USA have become party to that convention. So we can have United States becoming party to conventions of the Council of Europe. I wonder why cybercrime had more interest than our data protection convention. But this is really something in your own countries. You need to push for your government to come to the Council of Europe and say, we want to ratify. And actually, Morocco has been invited to join the convention, hopefully as they will be holding in this same center the Data Protection Conference this year, the annual event. They promised that by then there would be parties to the convention. Not everything is ideal in the Moroccan legislation. We have pointed it out in our opinion, and in terms of scope of application to police, for instance, that's something we have to review. But so what is fundamental with Convention 108 is that it has a horizontal scope. It applies to public sector, law enforcement, and also private sector. So here, definitely in the work of ICANN, law enforcement access to the data is something that can be protected by the principles we have in the convention. I want to mention other countries to show you that there is a momentum for Convention 108 extending outside Europe. We have Morocco, I mentioned, Mauritius, Tunisia, Senegal invited. Now Cabo Verde just requested. Uruguay is already a party. It was the first non-European country. So please, in your countries, push for this convention. It is the only instrument in the field that can protect individuals worldwide. I mean, legally binding instrument. Why the role of the Council of Europe is important, and I think in the discussion and the work, it's an intergovernmental organization. So here, in the setting of ICANN, our first entry point was the GAC. We are observers in the GAC because we are an intergovernmental organization, even if we work in a multi-stakeholder way too and involve in our discussion all interested parties. We focused in ICANN in feeding in the work of the GAC as observers. So I am a newcomer to ICANN. So I'm new to ICANN, which doesn't mean that ICANN is new to me, because if I can also come back to what we have already done, the committee of Convention 108, which is basically all the representatives, so at the moment it's 47 countries that come to Strasbourg to speak about data protection and the convention, all those delegations in this committee already in 2012 responded to a request by NCUC, by Robin Gross at the time, underlining the privacy concerns we had with WIS. But indeed, letters was not necessary or effective. So we decided to come to the meetings, feed a bit more effectively in the work, and Peter will tell you in detail what we're doing. But also, more recently, and I'm glad that Monica is there, the Council of Europe facilitated a report on basically ICANN policies and human rights. I think it was really an important report. It led to further visibility of the need to do this work. So Monica was co-authoring the report with Thomas Schneider, who's currently the chair of the GAC. There is a specific chapter in this report on privacy and data protection issues, so I invite you to read it. It's interesting to Monica to see that your recommendations you're doing generally, the list of points to see the progress, and I see there is progress. For instance, the mention of human rights in the bylaws, that's something that can be acknowledged, so things are moving. I just want to maybe also give you the broader picture about Council of Europe and ICANN, so not solely about data protection, because we're a human rights organization, so we're also working on other human rights like freedom of expression. My colleagues are dealing with this topic. And we have 47 countries that adopted last year a declaration on ICANN, human rights, and the rule of law. It's important because it means that those 47 countries have committed to a position, and I will read just one of the paragraphs, which I think is very relevant. Internet users should be able to exercise their human rights and fundamental freedoms without being subjected to unlawful, unnecessary, or disproportionate interference. These rights should prevail over the general terms and conditions of service of private sector internet companies and the technical mandates of specialized entities such as ICANN. So 47, this is available online. 47 countries that actually are represented in the GAC have committed to this position. And what is also interesting is that they have mandated the Secretariat to assist ICANN and its communities, basically to ensure that human rights and rule of law are referred and considered in ICANN. So the Council of Europe is really there to assist the communities to achieve that. I'm ready to respond to any question, but I think Peter will give you further information about concretely the work we're carrying. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. So I will start with the, if you allow me, with some basic questions. So what is ICANN is dealing with? Its primary is IP address and DNS address and all related data. So if we go a little bit further and we put it in a human rights context or at least in a legal context, does IP address have any rights already? I would say not as far as I know. Human and persons have rights, but not IP addresses and DNS addresses. However, we have to be we have to start to be familiar or to get accustomed to the treatment of IP addresses as persons. Yesterday, I heard a very interesting and for me strange intervention from a speaker is saying that you are all IP addresses in the room. Thank you, I didn't know that. And at least I have three IP addresses carrying with me, but okay, never mind. But so this is let's say a trend. I would also recall you or invite you to read a white paper prepared by Cisco about Internet of Things, which is $4.6 trillion business. So it's obvious that in the future you will be having a lot of IP addresses to be born and processed, and ICANN definitely will have a role in all this. So. But what kind of rights IP addresses or this related issues have? So it is what has been rightly pointed out by Sophie is the one issue is the cyber criminality, which is the IP addresses can be a target of it, and data protection and privacy. So Council of Europe is the only international institution that has convention on both of the issues. Cyber criminality and data protection. So this is how we are connected at the first place to ICANN and to this sphere. And now I will, if you allow me, go a little bit further in details. But for that, I will have to switch to data protection language. And I'm sorry that there's no. No interpretation for this, but please stop me if you don't understand anything, or I would be glad to answer your question later on. So for us, ICANN is, as I tried to in my introduction point out, is a global data controller. It who is generating a network of data processor, if not data controller themselves. So this is an interesting question also. And data controller who has extensive relation also with law enforcement community, international law enforcement world, I would say, like this. And I have noted, it is I noted that there is nobody from law enforcement community present here at this session, which I find a bit sorry for this. And to go further on about with the data protection and privacy considerations, so European institutions have already pointed out some generic data protection and privacy issues which can be associated or which can be
analyze that in ICANN's work, it was namely the Article 29 Working Party, which is the European Union data protection body, and the Berlin Group, and those concerns were about the purpose limitation, data minimization, access to data, proportionality, data accuracy, finality, and data retention, time and issues. So these concerns were very general. I mean, it didn't go very much into details. So what we have decided, and not we, but the Council of Europe, at first place by the declaration Sophie referred to by, of the Council of Ministers, and after that, following this, the TPD, the Committee for Convention 108, to go further on details on these issues and on other issues which come to light during our work or our cooperation. So, since Dublin, we have decided to participate in working groups. So we have we are a member of the working group PDP on RDS, and also we are a member of the across community working party on human rights. Of course, ICANN and the functioning of ICANN are very new to us, and we are also learning the process. However, we are committed to work on in these working groups and deliver our expertise in that. We have already spotted some policies where privacy and data protections can be at stake. According to us, these are the new GTLD policies, the WHOIS2, this RDS working party, the privacy proxy services, the RAAs, the who is low conflict, the thick who is, and the public safety issues and advice to GAC about public safety, where I can only reiterate that 47 members of GAC have a strong commitment towards privacy and data protection, and more generally to human rights. Also, that can be of interest of the public. The discussion about public interest, what is it? And I can tell you, this is a very hard topic. It's even in the European Union, we have a real bad time to define what is a public interest, especially. Consumer protection and of course, competition can be issues where data protection and privacy can play a role. So our plan in the future is to participate in ICANN meetings and in between meetings activities like working parties activities by an expert. For the moment, it's only me, but maybe in the future we can be, or there will be some other experts also from Council of Europe. And Our main goal is to channel, as I said, our expertise on data protection and privacy issues to ICANN PDPs. As a conclusion, I can say that we are of the perception that ICANN is at the turning point. We clearly saw that a lot of its constituencies and persons are willing to have a momentum in ICANN in order to become a modern, responsible, and global organization which respects human rights. And I think in that we can work together, we can share efforts and burden also. We are here for you, for all the constituencies, registries, registrars, and also law enforcement, because it's very important to speak about these issues, because there is a security threat around the world, and but it has to be done. Data processing has to be done according to very well recognized principles that we really want to help you to implement in ICANN. So basically that would be my perception and my vision of the actual work and the future work. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Peter. Stephanie Barron speaking for the record. I'd like to remind everybody to state their name for the transcript, because this is going out to remote participants and there will be a transcript afterwards, so it's really helpful to have your name there to know who's speaking. Over on the left-hand side, there's questions. Mark first, then, and then
Mark,
we'll just go down the row there.
Mark Seiden for the record. So asking what privacy rights an IP address has is very similar to the long-asked question, what privacy rights does a telephone number have? We have a lot of history about that. It's very similar. Paradoxically, one of the technical changes that's happened in the last few years that has increased the privacy rights, or the actual privacy of IP addresses, is something called carrier-grade NAT. Right now, carriers, because of the shortage of IPv4 addresses, are mapping their private address space into individual IPv4 addresses. And the logging that many websites do, which is purely IP address and not the source port number, will indicate any of hundreds of people who are sharing the same IPv4 address. Similarly, corporate proxies and outbound gateways do the same thing. So there's quite a push in the technical community to, if you want to have meaningful logs, you have to actually record the source port number as well. And the details of the way carrier-grade NAT is being implemented means that the logging requirements are extremely onerous on the carriers to associate what outgoing port number corresponds with what customer. So they're trying to avoid doing that completely. They can comply with law, produce all their logs, and it doesn't reveal who the customer is. An interesting technical development.
If I can just very quickly react to that, yes, it's very welcome. But being said that, the privacy is not something that is meant to, okay, I want to hide from the world and do as I wish or do anything I want. Privacy and data protection has very well-defined principles and rules which are stemming from those principles, which goes for the necessity, a proportionality, finality of data processing, and that balance has to be struck about all every each of data processing activities in order to find out whether if it's legal, whether if it's serving the purpose actually. But privacy is a very important human right, but it. Being said, it shouldn't allow to to being hide from your duties or your obligations and responsibilities.
Hi, Stacey Walsh for the record. Thank you, Peter, for your comments. And you picked up on something that I've been thinking about the last couple of days, is that there are no law enforcement officials here. Around the table, today, at this table, right. Yesterday I was at the Registrar and Law Enforcement panel, which was actually very civilized and interesting, and I think that maybe it's up to us to go out and invite them specifically to meetings such as this, and maybe the next ICANN we should have a human rights and law enforcement or privacy and law enforcement panel, which would bring these parties to the table and get us talking.
Thanks. That's an excellent idea, and we'll take that back and see if we can get enough time for that, because I think probably an hour and a half wouldn't do it.
Thank you. It's Mona Al-Ash'ar. I would like to, first of all, to say that I'm so happy to hear that the EU is very implicated in...
Council of Europe.
UEC. Yes. Sorry. Excuse me. I was writing about it, so excuse me. I got confused. Okay. So, because actually, as you can see already in this room, there is no such understanding of the meaning of privacy and the right of privacy. In the actual society, privacy is eroded with technology. And we do need to protect this erosion to happen again with what is going on in the domain name system here. So, first of all, privacy is not only a human right. It is the protector of many other human rights. You are not seeing the importance maybe now, but you will be seeing it when it will touch you and touch your rights and your private life. Even if some are from the American system, the legal system, the American one, in the state, there is a right said to be the right to be left alone. So even if you have a priority for the freedom of expression, do not forget that you have also to protect personal or private life of people. If you don't do this, then excuse me, we are put like naked before the whole world. And it is not good, not only for our private life, for our business also, for all of our concerns, profession, and everything else. So what I wanted to talk about, but excuse me, I have to say this about privacy. Look a little bit about this, the right to be forgotten. It is an extension of, it's a natural development of the right to privacy. You see, it is a we need privacy, we need to protect our privacy. I'm not talking as legal here or jurist, I'm talking as citizen in this information society where I am exposed all the time. We do need protection. What I wanted to say before hearing the room is I'm so glad to see that you are implicated. Because if you look at the GAG or at other meeting, you will see translation, you will see whatever. Well, here, since at each session, I don't see translation, which means many, many people who don't know, who are not English speaker, cannot participate effectively. So maybe we have to ask ICANN to engage in her role as because corporations has a social role. So they have the responsibility of ensuring better participation in these meetings. And about the law enforcement, I think that maybe they have other meetings, but believe me, they are interested in these issues, and they have to be. If we can, I don't know what we can do to make all the other constituency, even I dare say, and each one in this ICANN corporation understand that if they don't engage in protecting privacy in the context of human rights, then they will be creating problems for many, many users, millions of users, or I said of internet users. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Barron, for the record. I would just like to say that I agree with you totally about the translation issue, but please don't hesitate. There are many languages around the table. Il y a beaucoup de langues, beaucoup de capacités ici. Alors, si vous avez des questions, n'hésitez pas de demander une traduction quelque part. With respect to... to this issue about trying to, you know, the old expression in English, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. We will certainly try to set up a more cohesive law enforcement and privacy panel the next time to get people in the room. But ICANN has managed to not respond to the data commissioners since 1998, and I think it's been a very good technique. There have been many, many interventions, letters, even opinions of the Article 29 group, which is a committee of the European Community, not the Council of Europe. But it's kind of like water off a duck's back. So I'm not optimistic that we're going to have 500 people in the room. But we'll give it a go and see what we can do. I know Kathy's in the queue and has a question. With respect to this broader problem of getting basically privacy and human rights embedded into ICANN's procedures and processes, ironically, often the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, the SSAC, have better reports to lean on than some of the others. SSAC 54 and 55, they're asking the same basic questions, what is the purpose of who is, as the privacy commissioners have been asking for the last 17 years. So the problem is getting the theoretical issues of, and I don't mean theoretical in a sort of meaningless sense of the word, I mean the broader concepts of human rights integrated at the technical level at ICANN. That's a huge challenge. And the purpose of this meeting today was to bring you up on some of the working groups where we're actually trying to interpret what human rights means in the context of things like the IP address and the protocols. The broader discussion that Niels was referring to is definitely happening at the high level in terms of human rights, and we're then now trying to get it applied at various levels. So, okay, over to Kathy.
Unless Peter or Sophie wanted to, I'm going to change this up if you wanted to respond. Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate. The United States, ICANN is a U.S. corporation. There are a lot of U.S. companies involved. Data is valuable, and we're collecting it, and we're using it, and it's legal. What's the problem?
Well,
we've only got 10 minutes left.
Right, okay. So, with all you said, nothing is illegal, but I'm afraid that you haven't said a lot of things. So, it's how you are processing the data, or how you intend to sell it, and how you can have the profit off. Because to put it very bluntly, I don't think me as a data subject have all the necessary information about all the process you are doing with my data. This is one thing. The other thing is that I haven't been given the opportunity to decide in each of the data processing activities sequences, because there are a lot of, and what I'm always advocating for is to cut this down and cut in pieces and see legally what is feasible and what is not feasible, which fits to human rights and which fits not to human rights. And I'm afraid the U.S. also acknowledged many times the importance of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And even if they are not part of, yet, the Convention of 108, but there is a huge privacy a jurisprudence in the U.S. also, which is evolving. We can see, I think it's Washington Court, which is the new case. It's evolving in the U.S. You can see to Privacy Shield. It's something which was unforeseen before, and so there are things. which are in change, and the best way for this is a dialogue to better understand the two coins of the same coin, and at the end, what is the best asset of a company nowadays is the credibility and the fairness and the the overall ethical vision of the company. It's nothing more than that, and it includes the respect for human rights, including privacy. So you will be getting much more business if you are complying what we are saying, I'm sure.
Yeah, just to compliment, I don't think that from a European perspective we can say it's legal. That's the question of the applicable law and of transborder data flows. And this is clear that under European law, there are a number of issues that are of real concern in data protection law. So that's what we need to look at.
Monica Jolinute, for the record. I just wanted to concur with Sophie. Well, true. Let me be slightly more direct than Peter was. True. I can collect the data. I can use the data, sell the data. All is legal. What's the problem? Well, I'm sorry, but that is the problem in more that is a problem in more than half of the world, I guess. Indeed, ICANN is a USA-based corporation, but operates on a global level, as it proudly announces everywhere where it can. So I think we have to be more assertive in that. This is not legal. This is not okay.
Stephanie Perrin, I just wanted to add that more than the Europeans have data protection law, according to Graham Greenleaf's latest article and book, Asian Privacy Law, there's 109 last count. So up here first, please.
John Selby, for the record. We're seeing that a huge amount of effort's being put in amongst a wide range of stakeholders here at ICANN to develop and advance WHOIS policy. I draw people's attention to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a recent trade agreement that's been negotiated. Chapter 18 is an IP chapter, and it says at 1828.1b, countries will have for their CCTLDs online public access to a reliable and accurate database of contact information concerning domain name registrants. So policy is being developed outside entirely of this space, instructing what will be done in WHOIS. And that's a concern. This is the start. There's a number of other agreements coming down the pipeline, and it's likely we'll see more and more of this. So huge amounts of efforts go on here, and certain stakeholders who are not in this room can simply end run around them and get rules put in place which will cascade down and nullify a lot of this work. Your thoughts?
Stephanie Perrin again, and I'm hogging the mic, but I do feel I have to respond to that. The problem with trade treaties is that governments then have to implement them. They then will have to go home and violate their own data protection laws to put that in place. Now, I haven't looked at the precise wording, but if it is as you describe, contact information can be an email that says abuse@digitaldiscretion.ca, in my case. If they have spelled out cell phone number, legal contact with cell phone number, and all of the things that were the recommendations of the data elements in the EWG report, we have a far bigger problem. So do you know what it says?
I'm reading it here. It says reliable and accurate database of contact information concerning domain name registrants.
That's fine, because the privacy proxy registration data will be reliable and accurate. It will just not be publicly disponible to everybody.
Stephanie, country codes, they don't necessarily have privacy and proxy registration.
And it says reliable and accurate at the moment in this agreement. Reliable and accurate database of information about the registrant. So it doesn't necessarily say that you can use a proxy service because that would not be reliable and accurate about the registrant.
No, actually, that's one of the purposes of accreditation of privacy proxy services, so that we know who the service provider is and they become the registrant. The person who has hired them to get the domain name becomes the beneficial registrant.
Just a quick response. This time we cut the head of the Hydra off and three heads grew. We have to follow wherever they're negotiating issues that involve domain names. We've got to be there with a multi-stakeholder approach that includes privacy. Otherwise, we're going to lose, as you pointed out.
I just wanted to add, Monica Jean-Eluta, for the record, that it's not just who he is. Quite recently, Electronic Frontier Foundation also noticed the same about UDRP, although we will have a formal review process pending, but sort of in this agreement it says that this has to be the case it is, and it will stay like this. So it's quite confusing.
The moment we balanced UDRP in 1999, which we did, and put in some rights for registrants, a much worse version was put into bilateral treaties right away.
David Cake speaking. I've been saying this for quite a while. The TPP section on internet governance, I mean, it's got several other sections that I think are equally terrible on, copyright and so forth, but particularly the section on internet governance is just dreadful, right? It essentially says, here are these things that are developed by multi-stakeholder models, let's cherry-pick some things we like and impose them as treaties, which means they're unchangeable, which means that they, should the multi-stakeholder model decide, as we, may well with who is, that we went down the wrong path, but the, these bad policies get stuck on stuff. And Stephanie, I'm afraid I think you are wrong on the issue about proxy privacy accreditation and so forth, because these are CCTLDs. They do not have to follow GNSO policy.
Yes, sorry about that. Yeah, many of them ban privacy proxy services. So yeah, we're in trouble there.
Yeah. Or they have their own purposes. I mean, I know the dispute resolution procedure in many of them are different for very good reasons. For example, they may require. Their dispute resolution procedure may be different because it's not entirely about trademarks, because they use, business name registration services for the local nation or something, which is perfectly sensible. It's a terrible idea, but it more than just being a bunch of terrible ideas, it's implemented in the worst possible way. This is the anti-multi-stakeholder model. It's the, most stakeholders are completely excluded, up to and including elected government officials not allowed to see the draft text here until it's nearly done. And and it's totally top-down and, secretive and every other thing that's wrong. The one thing I do want to mention here is the initiative by the EFF, Jeremy Malcolm of the EFF, to identify this issue about essentially turning trade treaties into what we call a policy laundry. You take your bad policies that didn't get up in a multi-stakeholder or an open model, and then you slip them through the back way by this secretive, lobbyist-run process. And they come out looking good. You say, we spent years in negotiation. Yes, you spent years in negotiation where only, trade ministry and business lobbyists were ever allowed to get anywhere near the process, excluding even all manner of elected government officials. It's ridiculous.
I think we have strayed into the area of international global governance, and while it's fascinating and a bit discouraging to those of us who are pouring time into ICANN, because you're quite right. Let's maybe get the questions that were at the back.
I recommend Jeremy Malcolm's process.
Yes. If you could remember to state your name and come to the microphone, please. Maybe if we had a cue at the mic, that would help speed things up.
Okay, thank you. Hello from Abraham from Ethiopia. ICANN is incorporated in the US, and the US does not have a comprehensive data protection law, at least comparable to the UN standard, European standard. So can you brief us the implication of this fact to the issues we are discussing right now? Thank you.
Could you repeat the last half of that? Could it? We got the part that United States doesn't have comprehensive data protection law. California is actually the best state. But what was your question?
The fact that the U.S. doesn't have a comprehensive data protection law, at least comparable to the European standard, does have an effect to the data protection and privacy issues we are talking about now. So can you elaborate these issues? Yeah. How is this non-existence of this law is affecting the ICANN?
Yes, so we earlier on we gave the example of data retention, for instance. That's in European law, data protection law, you can only keep the data as long as it's necessary to fulfill the purpose. And then you need to delete the data. And there is this notion of proportionality in keeping the data. And here it was felt that the data retention obligations are basically in violation of this principle. So that's under European law. And so in order to sort out this problem, what was said to the registrars was you need to request for a waiver of this obligation. But this is not the way to do, because I'm just mentioning one aspect of data protection law, but there are a number of other data protection aspects that are of concern. And the registrars, so if I take a French one, for instance, subject to French law, has to satisfy and respect that law, but then following some of the obligations put on the register by the ICANN framework is conflicting with that. So I think it puts them in a difficult situation. That's really for local, if you look locally. And then there is the question of transborder data flows, which is also in Europe very, very strict. And I'm not speaking about the Council of Europe there. I'm speaking about the EU. They cannot export data outside EU or adequate countries when it's not really clearly regulated. So I have to admit I have not looked at the case of ICANN, if there is any contract that has been signed between them or not, but this is also an issue.
Yes, please.
Hi. This is Ephraim, for the record, Kenyanito from Access Now. And I'm glad to see that this discussion has evolved from the London paper to where it is right now. I just wanted to get the clarity about, I walked in late, but in case it was said earlier, the interaction between this stream of work and the human rights, the main human rights discussion that's happening with the GAC. Like, are you guys interacting? Second, about the data retention and data protection, it's good that that was raised, about the conflicts about that. And as I mentioned 2 years, 1 year ago, almost 2 years, would like to see this discussion moved beyond this space, because about the data retention, there's very great provisions about that, dealing with such kind of conflicts in the African Convention on Cybersecurity and Data Protection, getting those people in this room, the AUC, folks, especially Mokhtar and Alice, it will be a good idea to move this discussion beyond that, the original people who were in this discussion right from the beginning. Thank you very much.
Just a question. Can I actually, because earlier Peter mentioned that the Council of Europe is the only organization having both a cybercrime and a data protection instrument. It's not the case, because the African Union has a text that covers both aspects, except I think the difference between our instruments is that yours is solely for the members of the African Union. Has this text entered into force yet?
So far, 5 countries have ratified. So we're waiting for 10 more, and then it's going to enter into force. So as this process goes on, because it's an ongoing process, like yesterday the Kenyan minister talked about the Kenyan bill coming into force. South Africa is also in the same, Ghana. So it's a process that's ongoing, and it's good to engage right from the beginning and not come at the end once it has come into force. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then about the links between the works in various fora, I think Niels will respond. But as I said at the beginning, for instance, our work, we're pushing it also in the GAC as observers. But then between communities, Niels, I think, will be able to respond.
This is Niels ten Hoever for the record, and I can confirm that the excellent work that's being undertaken by in the PDP on WHOIS is being relayed to subgroup 5 of the Cross-Community Working Party on Human Rights. And the work on the Cross-Community Working Party on Human Rights is then, for instance, also relayed to the GUG Working Group on Human Rights and International Law. We even had a joint session yesterday. So I think there is ample coordination and collaboration between all the groups to also bring this forward, not only in the PDP processes, but also in Workstream 2.
Yes, and Stephanie again. I'm afraid we're going to have to cut this off because apparently somebody else is coming into the room and we're already over time. I do apologize. If you're interested in continuing discussion on how you can contribute on to either the HR or the privacy work at the ground level, please come and talk to us. We'll be hanging around outside, but I guess we have to clear the room for everybody else. So thank you very much for your attention today. It was most appreciated, and we'll follow up for the next meeting. Thank you.